Good evening, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and we are coming to you live from the Crime Talk studio. And here we are. We almost hit the 6 o'clock hour on the dot, but the reality of it is we ordered in food for dinner. They ordered it rather quickly, but we were preparing some other things. So we're just a little behind schedule, so we apologize. But that's, I guess, the reality of doing something live like this. Now, obviously, Crime Talk is primarily on YouTube. But YouTube put us into YouTube detention until June 3rd, until we can go live again. So by going to Facebook, this is kind of our way of sticking it to the man being YouTube, so that we are here and going live. It's been a while since we've gone live. I think we went once on Facebook previously several weeks ago, and then we had the whole coronavirus pandemic lockdown, and here we are. And so we wanted to do it again soon, and frankly, I think it's a lot of fun because we have the opportunity to really communicate, and we're working on getting a system where we can actually do a live show and have people actually call in and have them in a queue so that we can do this and talk about it. We'll see how things go tonight, and we'll try to stay on as long as people are interested, so to speak. If there's no interest, then we'll, you know, we'll go away, so to speak. So type in your questions. Let us know what you want to talk about. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on in the world. We'll talk about anything. Ask me a question. We'll try to answer it. We have Kyle, the producer, working everything, hoping that everything gets out onto Facebook. It'll be rebroadcast on YouTube, and I think we're even on Twitch. So anyone who's probably under the age of 25 will know what that is. But I think it's mostly for gamers, but it's a streaming application, and we are not going to put all our eggs in one basket, since YouTube, although they've been very good to us, never seems to call, never seems to write, always seems to demonetize our videos. So we're going to go as many avenues as we can so that we can, talk crime, because there's a lot going on out there, even when everybody's supposed to be at home, self-quarantining, and things of that nature. Now, Nieto Rebecca, I'm assuming that's Rebecca Nieto, asks a question: how can we get a free mug without becoming a criminal? Well, Rebecca, first of all, to get a free mug, you have to be a criminal and a dumb one. Now, we can probably run some contests, and, you know, we've got a couple of mugs, you know, not to do the shameless self-promotion just yet, but we got like the red one, we've got the blue one. This is kind of my personal favorite, the one that says lawyer, lawyer, lawyer on it. The one that I'm doing to wash down my fajitas from Trace Margaritas this evening. And, or you can go to the Teespring link, order your own mug. I think it gets there rather quickly. But we will probably do some contests where we can try to do it. Probably the best way for people to get kind of thrown into the contestants for free things is first go to scottreisch.com, scottreisch.com. Sign up for our free newsletter there. People that sign up for that, we occasionally give out free stuff. You can also go to our Patreon page, give out free stuff there as well. And, you know, see what you can do. But we can try, Rebecca. Rebecca Nieto, why don't you send me an email at scott@scottreisch.com, and give all the your information, and we will have young Mr. Kyle send you a mug. How's that? Will that work? You know, everybody likes free stuff. No dumb criminal has contacted us. Let's just get that clear. Now, I'm not sure why, because the Crime Talk mug will literally become what the Oscars have become to movie excellence. This will be the ultimate thing that someone will reach for. I can see it now. Trial will be on TV someday, and a defendant or their attorney is going to have their Crime Talk mug sending this signal out to everybody that says, I was a dumb criminal contestant winner. I can see it now. So let's start. Ask me some questions. Ask me anything that's going on in your mind that you would like to talk about. So far, kind of a small audience, but hopefully things will start building. We just released today's YouTube video, and we said we'll be on the Facebook side tonight, so maybe people will come join us as well after they have a chance to watch today's video. Obviously, Lori Vallow is going on in the news, the Letitia Stauch case, the Ahmed Arbery case is really getting people fired up. Man, you would have thought that, I mean, some people were just going after me saying, how dare you? You know you can carry a gun in Georgia. I get it. You can. But take a look at the law. And you know, that whole first aggressor thing that we talked about. It's not a thing. It's the law. You know, you can't rush up and charge at somebody with a gun and say, stop, I'm menacing you with this gun. Do as I say. And if somebody doesn't do it, then say, oh my gosh, it was self-defense. I had to shoot him. It's one thing if somebody comes up to you and says, I want to rob, give me your wallet. And you just, you know, and he has a gun and you pull out a gun. I think that's what people are forgetting in this process. And these type of cases, I don't know why people get so super emotional about it. It's like they pick a side and they just choose to ignore everything that's going on. And I know a lot of our normal Crime Talk viewers are not like that because they actually look at the facts. And like anything, think about what you do in life. You make the best decision that you can based upon the information that you have. And if there's new information that comes about, you adjust. You don't just say, facts and law be damned in life, and I'm just going to charge forward. That just makes you look, it can make you look silly if you ignore that. And hey, I've been the first one in my career. I've had cases where I'm like, this is going to be a great case. My client told me exactly what happened. This is an outrage. We're going to correct this injustice. And then guess what? I get the discovery and it's not even close to what my client told me. And there's video and it's just bad. And I have to go to clients and say, yeah, my opinion's changed because you didn't tell me the truth. You didn't tell me, you know, that type of information. So Amy Gibbs has a question. I get this quite a bit. Who is the military photo of? Is that a relative? Well, let me roll back over here and get it. So this, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a relative, all right? For those of you who don't know, in a previous life, long time ago, I was in the Marine Corps. I was a young enlisted Marine at one point, and then I was an officer in the Marine Corps as well. And one of the individuals that you learn about literally from boot camp, first day you're there, is one of the generals. It was Lieutenant General Chesty Puller. He was awarded 5 Navy crosses. And Navy crosses are just one level below the Medal of Honor. So this guy was a stud. Chosen Reservoir, he was, when he was surrounded by the Chinese, He was like, good. I've got him right where I want him. And he didn't retreat. He did a slow withdrawal and worked his way, but never surrendered. The man was a beast. Yes, it is Chesty Puller, Lieutenant General Chesty Puller. Everyone that was in the Marine Corps knows who Chesty Puller is. I've had bulldogs over the years. I had Chester the Bulldog. You know, it's just, you got to love Chester and Chesty Puller. Yes, Christy Bachman here. You have to wait. Where was that? Sorry about that. Christy Bachman. Yes, you have to wait for all the evidence and then you decide, right? Think about it. If anyone's ever had jury duty, raise your hand if you've had jury duty. What's the first thing the judge tells you to do? And they tell you repeatedly throughout the presentation of evidence. It says, do not begin your deliberations. Don't decide the case until I tell you. You haven't heard all of the evidence, and therefore you cannot decide. And a good trial, a good case, is kind of like a good mystery novel. There's always some little twist at the end that you weren't thinking about. And guess what? The defense doesn't have to tell you everything that went on. You know, you want to give them something to salivate over and let them listen and wait in anticipation. That's what you want to do, because you never know. And as a juror, that's why the judges tell them, you can't deliberate until all the evidence. Both sides have said, that's all we've got. We've given our best shot. Here you go. You decide what the evidence tells you. And remember, that's what juries decide, all right? Judges decide questions of law. That's why judges have hearings as it relates to motions that are filed in the case. What evidence will be legally permissible? What's the evidence obtained illegally? The judge decides that before the trial. At trial, there's literally two judges going on in the courtroom. One is the jury, which is why, just like when the judge deciding the matters of law enters and leaves, everybody stands. In most courtrooms, the jury enters the courtroom, and when they leave, everybody stands because they are the judges. So they get the respect of the judges, but they're deciding questions of fact. And they're given to law, the jury instructions to apply the facts to the law. And they decide whether something happened or didn't happen, or if it did, was it legally permissible under the law? All right? That's what, you know, goes on there. And that's why, you know, the jurors are told throughout, do not make your mind up until you hear all the evidence in the case. And even then, and although it's not evidence, you have closing arguments from both the prosecution and the defense. And the jurors may have listened to all the evidence, whether it was a short trial or a lengthy trial, and simply say that, oh, I didn't think about that. I didn't put all that together. And then you have 12 people in a felony case that go back and try to apply anything. So think about not only the burden of proof that you have to have in a criminal case, of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's the highest form of proof known in the law, not just anywhere, not just here in the United States, but anywhere else in the world, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It is not a proof beyond any doubt. It's not proof beyond a shadow of a doubt. That doesn't exist. It's a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is a doubt that would cause people to pause in matters of great importance to them, okay? Now, think about that. That's the standard. People have to be convinced about it. And then, let alone get 12 people to agree upon it. So the evidence is going to have to be pretty overwhelming to get 12 people to agree on anything. Think about it. The judges said, basically what the judge is saying, where would you like to go to dinner? Okay, here's the menu. Is this where you want to go? And to get 12 people to agree upon it, it's difficult sometimes. It's very, very difficult. Trish, how does your hair look so good in quarantine? Is the lovely Miss Kristen moonlighting as a hairdresser? No, she is not moonlighting as a hairdresser. I'm not sure I would let her cut this hair. This hair gets cut by one guy, and his name is Clint, and he has been a barber for 50-plus years, and he opened up last week because there were all kinds of confusion regarding the state, the county, and the city. And I called him on Saturday morning. I said, Clint, I need a haircut. I look homeless. Please get me in. He says he was completely booked. But since I've been going there for many, many years, even as a kid, Clint cut my hair. I said, I will come and wait and maybe see if somebody cancels. He says, fine, I'll get you in at 5 p.m. So that is how the hair looks so good. 0 to 3. It was driving me nuts. I haven't had long hair since high school. And, you know, oh, here's a good question, because we'll answer anything. We'll tell you how it is. Talk about facts changing and you make a decision. And sometimes you got to admit you made a mistake. It's called being an adult. Do you regret having Cheryl Lynn Cadle on your show? Obviously, we didn't know that she had plagiarized her book at the time that we had received an advanced copy. You know, I don't have time to go and site check, you know, every book that I read. Some things you have to take. Hopefully, it's true. You take people at their word. But obviously, that was wrong. And, you know, we tried, we admitted it, we were wrong. And we had, you know, the actual author from the book that she had, in fact, plagiarized from and had her on the show. You know, it was only fair. And, that was a regret. Sometimes you don't know. I mean, it seemed like the thing to do at the time. You know, Debbie Lane, I have had the same experience. I would love to sit on a jury. I've only been called once as a juror, and I made it to the room, and I was told to go away. I would love to sit as a juror. I think I would be a fair juror. I mean, I've done both sides. I mean, I was a prosecutor for a short amount of time in the Marine Corps. Obviously, I'm a defense attorney. I think I'd be fair and impartial. I know judges who have been selected as jurors. They said it was a great experience. And I've never had anybody on a jury walk away and say, oh my gosh, that was the most horrible experience of my life. Edie Miller, if Ty Lee turns up alive after she turns 18, will they still charge Lori for the current charges regardless? More than likely, yes. Now, I don't know if she's going to show up. I mean, if you listen to today's crime talk that posted on YouTube a little while ago, the mystery's been solved, right? Miss Boudreaux, the niece, has said that she's certain that the kids are okay. And, you know, therefore, basically, bygones, why don't we just let everybody go and these kids will turn up? I just don't get it. I mean, don't get me wrong. If I was her attorney, she, you know, one of the things you'd have to consider is say, just give the kids, turn them up. I mean, there's no way these kids are ever going to be in danger. The spotlight would be on them. Who is going to, you know, who's going to do it? Anything wrong to them. I just don't see it happening. All right. So, Ann Williams, what made you choose to defend instead of prosecute? Well, let me tell you, Ann, when I was in the military and in the Marine Corps, and just like any branch, they don't just put you one day and say you're going to be a prosecutor, one day you're a defense attorney. You do both. They expect all the judge advocates to be able to do both sides of any case. And frankly, I think that's what makes a very good lawyer is literally you could get up and argue one side and then ultimately get up and argue the other side because you know both sides of the issue. And that's it. I can tell you when I was in the Marine Corps, it was just more fun, okay? It was more fun representing individuals. Everybody had a story, you know? Excuse me. Everyone has a story. Everyone has something that has brought them to you. Now, in the Marine Corps, we didn't have a whole lot of hardened criminals. You know, these people had passed the mental, moral, and physical screening to make it into the Marine Corps. So we always, you know, when I got out, I joked. It was like, you know, the Marine Corps doesn't have, you know, real bad people. I mean, they have good guys that have made some knucklehead, you know, choices in life. You know, they made mistakes. But for the most part, they were pretty good guys. A couple of them, but they made it through. So you have to give them a little credit for that. Then when I got out, I knew I wanted to start my own practice, and I knew it was like, well, I can do criminal defense work. I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I just know I didn't want to work for anybody else. And, you know, that was over 20 years ago. And we started, you know, doing defense, started doing what I did. I actually put out some applications with some firms, and they're like, wow, you have a lot of trial experience because we did a lot of trials in the military. And they said, boy, you have more trial experience than some of our senior partners. I'm like, okay, so pay me a lot of money. I got a wife and two kids, young, and you know, a bunch of law school loans to pay off. Nobody wanted to do that. So I said, you know what? I am going to start my own practice. I told my wife, like, give me 3 months. If it doesn't make it, I'll go get a job. And then here we are, 20 years later, out having my own practice. And we now have, you know, if you count me, 5 attorneys. We're still a small firm, but we're big for a criminal defense firm as well. Kelsey James, is abruptly stopping JJ's medication child abuse or neglect? Risperidol has withdrawal effects. It absolutely could. You know, people that have children, you have a duty, your children, a duty to your children to take care of them. And obviously we'd like to get, you know, every child everything they need, but there's realities in life. But the mere fact that you cancel a prescription, like, you know, that kind of says you're the only person in the room that knows somebody's not coming back. Those types of little things are what could ultimately become important if that case ultimately proceeds to trial, which I think it will. You have some very strong-willed people up to this point, and I think they're going to keep clawing and scraping to do whatever they can to get through everything that's taking place. Amy, what inspired you to do a YouTube channel? Well, kind of said this before. Originally, I was going on a trip. We were all going to Asia, and at that about that time, a friend of mine had a little YouTube channel, the Big Jackpot, and I was like, "Oh, this is cool because we're going, and he's going to gamble, and this is kind of neat." And I'm just filming it because, like, you know, here's my trip. Every time we've gone on trips before, I was always kind of the official videographer of the trip. And then I never knew what to do with it. So we did that trip. And then I was, you know, frustrated by what was taking place, particularly during the Chris Watts matter. You know, my friend Scott of the Big Jackpot said, man, you should put up analysis of the Chris Watts case. I'm like, who wants to hear what I have to say? And it turned out that apparently some people did because I had a perspective of a criminal defense attorney. And, you know, I think everybody who particularly follows true crime or works in the field, gets so frustrated when you watch the evening news and, you know, there's a 30-second blip on a case that takes place during the day that's usually of some great interest to the majority of the people, or some people anyway. And they don't explain anything. And when they explain something, they get it wrong. That was kind of my way. It's like, hey, let's explain this. And I remember when there was a, they added on the Chris Watts case for a status conference, and it was kind of unannounced. And my first thought was, well, they're either moving the preliminary hearing date or, oh my gosh, he's taking a guilty plea. And sure enough, he was going to take a guilty plea. They were notifying the court of that. I remember I had, you know, friends in me, I was like, how did you know that was going to take place? Well, what else would it have been? I, you know, that's what I do. And so that's why we do it. And the other thing is, I'm wanting people to explain, you know, everybody talks about the Constitution and everybody becomes a constitutional law expert, you know, anytime there's a hot issue. And it's like, okay, let's actually take a look at it and see what it says. The Constitution is the rule book. It's what we govern the game by here in society. And I think most people, unfortunately, have not even actually read the Constitution. Maybe we should do that one show. We'll just go through, read the Constitution line by line. It doesn't take that long. It's not that lengthy. It's rather clear, short sentences, very factual and to the point as to what was said. And so that's the reason why we did it. We just wanted to have people be able to explain what's going on in the news, give a little different perspective than, you know, some young kid right out of journalism school that doesn't know the difference between an arraignment and a preliminary hearing and or hearsay. So that's why we did it. Let's see here. Let's ask Melissa, are you licensed to practice law in other states? No, I am licensed to practice law in the state of Colorado, but I have been admitted to several federal courts throughout the country, specifically New Mexico, Wyoming, South Dakota, South Carolina, the Middle District of Pennsylvania over the years. But I do have potential clients that call me all the time, and I have to tell them sometimes, man, I'm honored, I'm flattered that you want to hire me, but sometimes it's just not economically viable for me to do that. I'd be more than happy to get on a plane, co-counsel with local counsel, and try a case if somebody's willing to pay me. It can be done. It's called, you have to be admitted what they call pro hoc vice, so that you're admitted to practice law, and you usually have to have a local attorney, which is the best way to do it, act as co-counsel with you, because they're familiar with the judges, the nuances of the courtroom, how to handle that. Who's that? Let's see. Trish, North Carolina. That's great. Darlene, Manitoba, Canada. That's great. Debbie Lane, if a corona vaccine comes available, will you get it? Yes. When I have my life back. I don't know about you all, but I am about sick and tired of this. Mia from Dallas, how are you? Jennifer, how are you? Good evening. Joyce, Trish, I'm in Shelby. North Carolina, my daughter actually had an interview today, had an interview via whatever, Zoom, for a fellowship. So when she gets done with her nurse practitioner program, maybe she'll be going to North Carolina. If she doesn't, hey, it looked like it was some pretty tough competition. Congrats to whomever gets it. Let's see here. Yes, I'll be getting the vaccine. Absolutely. Let's see here. They're scrolling a little different. Hi, Scott. Where did you learn to fly? My granddad was a pilot in the Spanish Civil War. Wow. I learned to fly here in Colorado just about 20 years ago. Always wanted to do it. Thought I was going to actually fly in the military, but it didn't turn out. Hurt my shoulder. Had to have surgery. NPQ'd me. Just shows you how things have changed these days. Back then, if you got glasses, which I did in law school, you could no longer fly. You could only be an NFO. But now, when my son was going to school, and he's a pilot in the Air Force, you can actually get LASIK surgery. That was an automatic disqualifier when I was, working on trying to become a pilot in the military. Didn't quite happen, but that's all right. I got to go to law school instead. So everything works out the way it's supposed to. Trish, how come you're on Facebook tonight instead of YouTube? YouTube put us in YouTube detention, at least until January 3rd. June 3rd. So this is our way of sticking it to the man. We're not going to let YouTube hold us back. We go to the next, we're taking it to the people, all right? No one's going to keep the man down. I don't care if it's the government or YouTube. We're going to get to the people. Let's see here. Yeah, let's see. Melanie from Salt Lake, thanks for tuning in this evening. And UK, wish we had channels like this. Well, you can always, this is the beautiful thing about it is, here we are. How are we doing? People, oh, we got some more people. See, maybe they're coming over from YouTube this evening. I'm a little surprised. Usually people want to talk about, care to comment on the Michael Flynn case. Well, let's see. Now, normally, if you get into stuff political, you usually piss off half of your audience. But let's talk about it in generalities, okay? First, so let's see. What does it take? For those who aren't familiar, Michael Flynn, he was a national security advisor. He was basically under investigation for making contacts with Russian ambassadors kind of during this transition, what have you. Ultimately, and I think I've seen James Comey in a video say he actually did, in fact, for lack of a better term, trick Michael Flynn into speaking with them and thinking that he didn't need an attorney in any way, and we don't need to go through all the important channels of having White House counsel here, et cetera, et cetera. He actually brags about it. I've seen that. And so he ultimately pleads guilty to basically lying to the FBI, which is ironic because the FBI concluded that he had not lied, but they continued to pressure him. His attorneys probably said, you didn't do anything wrong. Why are you pleading guilty? Well, then they do what the government does. Whoa, we're going to go after your son. Looks like your son may have done something, but we'll let him go if you plead guilty. So he does, he pleads guilty. So he goes in front of a federal judge and he pleads guilty and says, yes, I lied. Well, as things go on, the government does what they do. And they say, well, you cooperated with us. All this investigation is going on as it relates to Russiagate, all those types of things. So we're not going to sentence you just yet because you're valuable to us. So apparently Flynn goes in and tells the government more stuff that he knows, and they say that you're of no use to us at all. In fact, we may even think that you're actually lying to us now. To make a long story short, this guy says, I want to withdraw my guilty plea. And let me tell you, it's super difficult to withdraw a guilty plea in federal court. I have never seen it done personally. I'm not aware of anyone in my locale. So when Flynn got to basically, I think the government confessed and said, fine, we'll let you withdraw your guilty plea because things were starting to look bad. And why did they start to look bad was because there was no, it turned out the government had failed to turn over what they refer to as exculpatory evidence, Brady material, all right? And the government has an obligation under a case called Brady v. Maryland that says the government has to turn over anything that would reduce the guilt of the defendant, okay? Because that's what we do in a fair, free, and open society. We're going to give the defense anything they want, just about everything they want, and we're going to get them. And I used to have a boss in the military because I was like, oh, we don't need to turn that over, sir. We can do. And he said, no. A good prosecutor, a great prosecutor, will give the defense everything they want, everything they are legally entitled to. Give it to them, and we're still going to convict you, okay? It's the prosecutors that try to play hide the ball, that won't give you stuff, that they're withholding things, they're redacting things. Those are the ones you have to worry about because they're playing games. A good one's going to say, I don't care what it was. I'm going to give it to you. And frankly, a prosecutor's oath and obligation is not to get a win. It is to seek the truth. And they have an ethical obligation to only take a case if they believe that they can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So in the Flynn case, notes were turned over ultimately that said that their own agents believed that he wasn't lying, and they prosecuted him anyway, and they scared him into pleading guilty. Now, some people say, who's going to plead guilty of something you didn't do? Happens all the time. If you are in jail or your family and you're jeopardy, you just want to get it behind you, people plead guilty all the time because the risk of going to trial, the cost of going to trial is huge. I'd heard reports that Flynn had basically mortgaged his house, lost his house, spent every amount of his savings on attorneys. So it's expensive. People do that. So when the government doesn't turn over these documents, they're not playing fair. And how can you make the best decision, give the best advice to your client if you don't have all the information? That's what attorneys do. They make the decisions based upon the information that they have. So now then Flynn gets to withdraw his guilty plea. These notes come out. It finally comes out that he did nothing wrong. The government files a motion saying, basically, our entire investigation is crap, and we don't believe that we could prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt. All our witnesses would be people that have been fired for the FBI for truthfulness violations, you know, for being untruthful, and we don't believe that we can prove our case. Now, could they have fought it? Yes. Is a judge going to deny their motion? Unlikely. No judge can make the prosecutor continue a case if he doesn't want to, because that's their obligation. I had a DA once dismiss a case mid-trial once she finally realized what I was telling her was the truth and that the complaining witness was not being credible. We'll just leave it at that. And I came back from lunch and she gave me a motion to dismiss. Now, I wish she had done that, you know, 4 months earlier before my client had to be put through hell, because nothing had changed. That was her story. We just cross-examined her up and down and it wasn't true. So that's the Flynn case. I personally think, you know, I think things are going to get real ugly. And once again, it's kind of like we talk about, I don't care what side you're on, you know, people should be only on the side of the law and not the police law, but the law. If the defendant violated the law and it can be proven, so be it. If the police violated the law, the prosecutors violated the law, so be it. They should be fired. You know, every one of those attorneys that was on that case, if they knew that he hadn't committed a crime and they prosecuted a man because he was innocent, every single one of them should lose their law license. They really should. It's just that simple. And that's why being a prosecutor is, you have so much power in your hands. You can affect people's lives, whether they go to jail, whether it's a simple case for, you know, not having a license, or whether they go to prison for the rest of their life, whether they deserve mercy or they deserve none. That's all held by a prosecutor in their discretion. And some are really good at it, and some just love the power. And I have said it, and, you know, don't be concerned about somebody that wants to make a lot of money. Money creates a lot of problems, creates freedom, gives you the time, the freedom to go do things. Always be concerned about people that want power. in my humble little opinion, okay? I mean, sometimes I got prosecutors and I think, what in the hell happened to this guy that he is such an evil human being? Like, you know, was he beat up or picked on as a kid and he's getting back at everybody? Or is this just his temperament? Like, just listen to the facts of my, listen to my client's story. I'm not, you know, oftentimes people think that everyone, the role of a defense attorney is always to get everybody off. No, oftentimes most people like admit I screwed up, but I didn't do exactly what they're charged. Get me a lesser punishment. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to go to prison. A lot of it is presenting mitigation to the district attorney to say, hey, my client messed up. What can we do to make it right? Most of our clients are very, very good people. All right. Some of the biggest cases that I've ever won, though, have been when the prosecutors have failed to listen to a single thing I've had to say. It's like, all right, let's go to trial. And bam, we win. So let's see here. Okay, what have you been watching? Anything? All right. Couldn't get into the whole Tiger King thing. But yesterday I actually binged watched Outer Banks. And someone said, oh, it's like a teeny bopper show or something like that. And the first couple of episodes were a little slow, I thought. But man, it really took off. And I think I was up to about 2 a.m. Binge watching that. Also binged watched with the lovely Miss Kristen, The Americans. That was really, really, really good. Couldn't stop watching that one either a couple of times. Billions has started again, but so far season number three is a little slow, at least the first two episodes. The first two seasons, oh my gosh, couldn't wait for that to go on. Kristen Lara, what happened? Why are you not on YouTube? We are still on YouTube. We just, we're in YouTube detention. We had somebody complain. We used a video that our position was it was fair use because we were providing education and commentary on it. And YouTube, without listening to us, said, we're finding for this other person, and you are in YouTube detention, crime talk. But of course, you can't get anybody to call you back at YouTube. You can get an artificial intelligent email asking if their response, their canned response, was helpful, and you say no. And you go through about six layers of customer service complaining that you just want to talk with somebody, and you can't. And we even hit the 100,000 subscriber mark, which is kind of that first little threshold where you're supposed to kind of maybe get a little respect, a little dignity that they'd actually maybe let you talk to somebody occasionally. Nothing yet. Nothing yet. Let's see. Let's go back to any questions. Kyle, you seen any really good ones I missed while I've been talking away here? What do you think Letitia Stout's defense is going to be? You know, that's going to be an interesting one because she's made so many statements that are contradictory to facts that the police have already checked out. You know, I think it'll be a hodgepodge of something. Okay. Maybe, you know, I personally, and I don't want to get into speculation too much because that, I mean, that's not what we try to do here. But I think it's interesting that Letitia Stout's daughter, I believe her name is Harley, has refused to speak with the police. And whoever got her lawyered up, God bless her. Okay. Exercising her constitutional rights, that's a good thing in all regards. But Letitia Stout's made so many mistakes, and I'm not saying, I mean, she made, if she harmed this child, that's obviously a huge mistake, one that cannot be taken. It's more than just a mistake, and she'll have to be punished for it. But she's made so many statements so far that completely contradict what the police have been able to confirm. I'm sure they're working on more and more stuff. I still think the attempted escape on the way back from South Carolina in the state of Kansas is huge, huge consciousness of guilt. And, you know, I mean, let's think about it. If you're truly innocent, why are you not just saying, hey, let's go have a trial. Let's go have a speedy trial. Let's get this done. The truth is going to come out. You don't try to escape from police authority. It kind of makes you think you really don't want to go back to Colorado and, you know, face the issues. You know, I don't know all the facts. I don't know what the client obviously may have said to their attorneys, but there may be the type of situation where, you know, maybe it's not first-degree murder. Maybe it is some sort of second-degree murder or heat of passion type defense. And then, you know, somebody panics and they freak out and they don't know what to do and they just, it goes spiraling from there. Those are the type of, you know, things. And, you know, you could present a pretty rational defense saying, hey, the kid was there, we pushed him, we shoved it, whatever, he fell, he hit his head, he bled out, I panicked, I didn't know what to do, my husband's going to hate me, no one's going to believe me, oh my gosh, we've seen how this happens before, and she panics. But they can say, hey, there was no after deliberation, it was some sort of accident, heat of passion, something along those lines, from what we know. We don't have all of the information just yet, but there's so many things that just look bad. And, you know, there is a flight instruction, you know. Maybe she's just going to say, hey, my husband left me or he's going to divorce me, so I went back home. But, someone just reminded me, Ozarks, best season ever. That was pretty good. And the other one I started watching a couple episodes last night was You're Dead to Me or Dead to Me, I think, which had the lady from, I can't remember her name, but you know what I'm talking about, the blonde lady. It was pretty good. It was pretty funny as far as talking about death and people in storage lockers. Let's see. If they haven't sufficient evidence in the Tammy Daybell case, would they most likely present it to a grand jury or return an indictment? Well, this is a good opportunity here, Edie. Let me explain how things work. All right. So, jumping back to the U.S. Constitution, it basically guarantees every citizen a right to a grand jury indictment, okay? A grand jury, they select grand jurors. They usually sit for 6 months, maybe a year, and they come in, you know, in a secret, undisclosed location because they're to be done in secrecy. And people don't run around saying, oh, I got grand jury, you know, jury service. And they'll sit, say, usually for a day or so at a time, sometimes longer, and they will hear evidence about a case. And a grand jury can, usually at the request of the prosecutor, say that we're going to issue subpoenas if they're conducting an investigation. It gives the power of subpoena to the grand jury via the prosecutor and the investigator that's been sworn as an investigator for the grand jury. And they come back and they give reports and they say, this is our case. And sometimes, let's say if you have a client that gets arrested for possessing a firearm that he shouldn't possess, and he gets arrested and they take it to a federal court, they can arrest him at that time and they will proceed by what they call a complaint. And the complaint is saying, you have violated the law and this is what we're going to do to keep you in custody. And you can have a preliminary hearing to see if there are facts sufficient to support probable cause that a judge has already found. And usually the detective gets up or agent gets up and regurgitates what's in his affidavit for arrest warrant. But in the federal system, everyone is entitled to be indicted by a grand jury for a felony. And therefore, even though you're charged by complaint and information, usually within 30 days, they meet for the grand jury. Grand jury says, you know, the detective says, we pulled this guy over, routine traffic stop. We found he had a warrant. We searched the car. He had a gun. He's a prohibited person. Boom. Probably takes 10 minutes to indict somebody. Okay? Same thing there. A lot of states will require indictment by a grand jury, but some states, you have an option. So here in Colorado, most cases are done by complaint and information, which is the process that I just talked about. You get charged, you go in front of a judge, the judge advises you of what you're being investigated for, you come back in 72 hours, and you have charges. The district attorney looks at it and says, yep, I believe this is sufficient based upon the affidavit. Judge reviews it, signs it, boom, you have charges. Normally on much bigger cases that involve investigation, you have an indictment, and they usually come down, they're thick, multiple co-defendants, big, usually much larger investigations, at least the way we do it here in Colorado. Everything in federal court is done via indictment. However, just like everything in the law, there's always an exception to the rule. And if you say, for example, want a plea bargain, and you don't want to, and you're pleading to an added count, you don't want to wait to go to a grand jury, you can waive your right and proceed by information. So going back to the question, I don't believe that, I mean, if there's not enough information, a grand jury will, if the prosecutor can't come up with enough information to file a complaint information, they can go to the grand jury to get, you know, have investigative powers, subpoena powers, but they kind of have that already. It just kind of sweats people because if you just file a case, nobody has to go in for it. That's right. Christina Applegate. Thank you, Kristen. That was the one in the case, the movie last night, You're Dead to Me. So if they don't have enough information, a good grand jury is good to kind of sweat people, all right? Because when you go in front of the grand jury, you're not supposed to lie. You're under oath. And if you're a target, you're told that and you have a right to assert your Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. If you're a witness, sometimes you may be entitled to an attorney. If you refuse to testify in front of the grand jury, they can give you, you know, you can get immunity. They can force you to testify unless you have a valid Fifth Amendment claim. But it really freaks people out when people start getting grand jury indictments because they know something big is coming and they don't know when. And they also know that people are talking to the grand jury because they get scared. We've mentioned this before. The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. And when people go to the grand jury, ooh, it's a big deal. In federal court, if you're a witness, you don't get to take your attorney in with you. In the state court, you do, but you, defense attorneys just have to sit there. But you get to see where the prosecution is going. And I'm sure most people have heard the phrase, you could indict a ham sandwich. Most of the time, yes. I actually had a case once where I represented somebody and they said, we're doing this investigation, just need your guy to, you know, come and tell the truth. I'm like, he's a target. He can't talk. Don't worry about it. Just come in. It's all good to go. They knew they weren't going to indict and return a true bill at that time. And so, like, okay, when the prosecutor's telling you got nothing to worry about, sometimes you have to take them at their word in regards to that. So it's a different world, but that's how every case gets started. Let's see here. Christy Slavin, they bill America, the local DA's office only requested prosecutor assistance, not investigation. Does that indicate they've already established a good case? You know, Christy, I have no idea what that necessarily means. Usually prosecutorial assistance, not investigative assistance, means they may be doing it in-house. I'm sure I know the prosecutors have their own investigators. They may not be asking the police to help any further. I just don't know. I don't want to tell you something for sure. If I don't know, I'll tell you. Oh, yeah, I'm sure Paige Eileen or Eileen Paige, I'm sure they will be tracking Ms. Vallow quite thoroughly if she were ever to get out. But I don't see any bond reductions coming anytime soon. And unless Chad Daybell comes in and brings more information or brings more money to the table, I don't think he's getting out. And let's face it, if he had the money, he'd get her out, or he's holding on to it for himself, unless if he thinks he has some issues coming down the road, which he may. We'll have to see. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens with the autopsy report with Tammy Daybell. Obviously, we don't want to speculate about that. You know, she could have died of natural causes. People die every day. Let's see. They affect the trial with a fence from hometown and the prosecutor's from out of town. Can you comment on the home court advantage in the Arbery case and how much that can affect the trial with the defense from hometown and the prosecutors from out of town? It actually can affect a trial. Normally, it's the defense counsel from out of town. You don't want to be hometowned, that's for sure. I had a case, I swear to God, I'm up in Steamboat, Colorado, representing a professional, just a little DUI case, but it wasn't a first, and kicked their butt all over the place, right? Come back, and they split the baby, and they say guilty to a lesser charge. Couldn't believe it. Even the judge was a little shocked. But as I'm walking out, all the jurors are sitting there talking to the prosecutor, saying, "Ah, we'll see you out on the slopes real soon." I mean, just ridiculous. And sometimes that's what happens. You know, you don't want to be that big city lawyer from Denver, you know, going to a small town. You have to kind of play it down. But sometimes you just have to smear the room and you know that you won. You know, we had a trial. It was this time, just about this time last year. It was a three-week trial. Once again, a little ski town, but I got moved to another town. But it was a hometown kind of thing. And we just wiped the prosecutors up and down with it. But they found our client guilty. And they wanted some ridiculous sentence, like, you know, 80 years. And the judge gave the minimum. She knew it. She commented that the issues will probably be, you know, raised on appeal, but she didn't want to, you know, be not let it go to the jury, so to speak. And, you know, it was an emotional case. I mean, it was a super emotional case when you have two deceased kids and nobody knows exactly what happened. You know, it's a problem. But, you know, it was a case where no one could say how the kids died. Was it natural causes? Was it not? Who did it? You know, most people think about a case, you have to be able to show who did it, where, and in that particular jurisdiction. In a homicide case, you want to know, you know, Mr. Smith did it in the parlor with the candlestick. You know, that was the crime. That's what you have to prove. Identity, who did something. And when you can't say that particular person did it, and this is how it happened, it was actually a homicide or a death, it's very, very difficult to prove. But sometimes the emotions get the best of people, and we'll see if, you know, it's going to have a huge, that particular case will have a huge, I think it's a huge issue that needs to be resolved by our Supreme Court as it relates to what duty do you have to somebody else's child? You know, if somebody gets injured down the block, does the block owe a duty to the kid to make sure nothing bad happens to him? Or, you know, it's issues that need to be resolved, and our Supreme Court's kind of punted on it for a long time, so maybe now they'll actually have to decide it. Let's see. How crucial is it for the prosecution to place Letitia Stauch in Florida near where Gannon's body was recovered? Well, I think if they can't place her, they need to place somebody in association or in cahoots with her, assuming, you know, giving her the benefit of the doubt as it relates to the presumption of innocence. Because how did he get there? Who did it? I mean, they were supposedly watching her pretty thoroughly. So who else was involved? How else did they communicate? It certainly helps from the defense perspective to say, you know, my lady panicked. You know, maybe she didn't do it. Maybe he came home and he was injured and panicked and no one believed her. I mean, who knows what the real story is? I mean, really. And I've said this before. Every time as a defense attorney, you think you have heard it all, somebody comes up with something else. And I've had clients like, that's impossible to happen. No way. And the more you check into it, it's like, oh my gosh, this is what happened. Because sometimes just bizarre things happen that you can't explain, that you wouldn't expect to explain. It just happens. And, you know, once again, everybody has a story. If people don't, you know, have a little life perspective, so to speak, I think it really, you know, depends, you know. I know when I was picking juries, a lot of times I would ask, where do you live? Okay. If I have a client who, you know, has a ninth grade education, did something, and, you know, stuff that you just don't think is necessarily normal if you live in the wealthy part of town, but that's the way things happen in the not so wealthy part of town. I want to know where those jurors live and say, hey, I've been there, done that. We can completely understand how that would have happened or why somebody did things. So, you know, half the battle of picking a jury is getting people that are willing to look at the facts and say, wow, that is in fact possible. I think the police are going to have to figure it out. You know, we'll find out in the preliminary hearing what evidence they have linking that to Letitia Stauch. And, you know, her attorney should not try to win that case at preliminary hearing because it's not going to happen. It's not going to get dismissed, okay? No judge is going to kick that case out at that level, at that early stages of the proceedings. A good defense attorney, I think, in that preliminary hearing would be like, hey, detective, tell me every piece of evidence that you have that links my crime or links my client to this particular crime. Okay, are you sure? Is there anything else? Well, I got you here on the record. I'm going to lock you in. Anything else? Okay, because later when they go back and they try to, you know, find new information or it turns out what they maybe said before wasn't exactly right, they're locked into it under oath that that's what they were relying upon. And if anyone actually read the Letitia Stauch affidavit, there's a little bit of speculation going on there by the detectives based upon their training and experience, and they believe that this is the next step. It very well may be a rational thought, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it actually happened. Do you think that Chad, where was that? Oh, let's see here. Let's see here. Do you think Chad Daybell will cut a deal with the prosecutors if he's charged in Tammy's death? I don't know. You know, everybody's got a price. Everyone knows what they did and what they didn't do. It just depends. Scott, will you and Linda team up again? Perhaps. Thoughts on Mark O'Mara's new Stand Your Ground case? He's on the other side of this one. Well, Mark O'Mara is obviously the individual that represented, what's his name on the Trayvon Martin? Zimmerman. You know, and let me just double check. Yeah, Mark O'Mara, I met him actually, gosh, it was right after the Zimmerman trial. Literally, I think that trial ended in like maybe July or August or something. I met Mark O'Mara at a National Trial Lawyers Conference. Real nice guy. He just finished, I saw him in January at the National Trial Lawyers down in Miami, Florida. And, you know, he's not doing as much criminal defense. He's moved on to kind of mass torts. He's been given the secret handshake, so to speak, in that, and taking more plaintiff side cases. I'm not gonna tell you I'm familiar with his civil case that he may be handling on that, but you know, you take your clients if you think you have a good case. You know, just because you defend one client on a particular type of case doesn't mean that you think every case is right under that particular sets of law and the circumstances. It varies, okay? It just varies. How long do you have to file a class? I'm assuming class action. Just depends. If you think you have a case, you need to contact an attorney in your area, usually the best. What are your thoughts about representing somebody who went on, killed a police officer and went on a killing spree? I don't know. Everyone's entitled to a defense. I happened to represent a gentleman years ago in federal court. He wasn't charged with that, but he had went on a cross-country killing spree, had beaten two death penalty cases in multiple jurisdictions. I picked him up on a case he was a federal prisoner in, and but he had killed two police officers in that matter. And to sit around and talk to the guy, he was the nicest guy in the world. Obviously, he had a bit of a temper, maybe a little some thought processes didn't go exactly the way he thought they should have. However, you know, everyone's entitled to a defense, no matter how heinous everyone has done. And you could flip that, you could flip that around and say, well, how would you feel about representing somebody that killed a police officer? Okay. Well, what do you think about it? Would you represent a police officer who was accused of killing someone that was innocent? I mean, if asked to, we'd consider each case. I mean, that's what defense attorneys do. A lot of times you don't get to choose your cases. Sometimes, you know, as a private attorney, you can say, I'm not available. I don't want to take that one. You can't pay the retainer, et cetera. But for the most part, I think most people that do criminal defense work, they want to take the cases. I know even now, these days, when I was a young guy, I was like, man, give me the worst case possible. I am going to, you know, show the world what I can do. Even now, give me the worst of the worst. Give me the worst cases around. I'll take it. I watched an interview with Zimmerman's attorney, and he thinks that the Michaels were wrong as well. You know, like I said, my thought may change. I'm just telling you, based on the Ahmed Arbery case and the McMichaels, the father and son combination there, it legally, you know, people say, you can defend yourself, you can do whatever. He grabbed the gun. Yes, but under the law, there's a thing called initial aggressor. You can't be the initial aggressor, and then when you get your ass kicked, claim, you know, you had to do something above and beyond and kill somebody. You can't go pointing guns at people and don't expect them to fight back too. And so, although you don't have to retreat, the law, we read the jury instructions from Georgia, you don't get full protection. And I'm telling you, like I said, I love the Second Amendment. I love the First. I love the Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh. I love them all. But this situation could have been completely diffused. Wait for the professionals to get there. Follow him in your car. If the police found he did something wrong, let them deal with it. Do you think now the McMichaels, as they sit there in their jail cell awaiting charges, do you think they would probably like to just sit back and say, we should have probably have just let it go? Was it that important? Okay. A house that was under construction. It didn't look like he had something there. And I don't care if the guy went there casing the joint. It doesn't mean under the law you get to go and do it. We're not talking make my day. Make my day laws are if you're in your house. It's not your neighbor's house. It's not your neighborhood. It's your house. And I get you can carry a firearm open in Georgia. God bless it. I frankly wish we could too here, you know, everywhere you go here too. I would love it. But that's just not what the law is. And like I said, I deal in reality. I deal with the facts around the law is. Sometimes I've been accused of being a little pessimistic sometimes. But I can always get creative if we have to go to trial on a tough, tough case. Sorry if we froze. I guess somebody said our internet froze. Uh-oh. Let me ask the young producer, Mr. People are complaining that our internet is slow. Well, we've been going for about an hour and a half, so... Looks like we maybe have some issues. Sorry about that. That's not the way we wanted to end it, that's for sure. Well, thanks. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in this evening. We appreciate it. Like I said, in a couple of weeks, we'll be able to do YouTube again. And with all this fabulous technology, we'll be able to do YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, Periscope, and for the Patreon. And not telling anybody they have to do it, but... Patreon, we're going to do some Zoom calls where hopefully we'll pick a subject or we'll pick a subject that our Patreon members would like to discuss. And, you know, we'll kind of do this just one-on-one and we can talk about the facts of cases that you all want to talk about. It's amazing. Some of the things that people send to me in their investigation or their summaries of information that they've done is amazing. There's so many talented people out there, and the information that they send to me, I have to look. I apologize, I don't remember her name, but she sent me a summary of the Letitia Stauch, and this thing was cross-referenced. My first thought was, man, we should hire this woman. She was great. And so, just because somebody's an attorney doesn't mean they know everything. I assure you of that. Only thing, you know, that I have that you all don't necessarily have is the actual experience of doing it. But people can Google, people can read the law. You can read that and figure it out. I just have a little more practical experience, but it doesn't mean I know all the answers, but I certainly will try to get those. But anyway, if you want to do Patreon, you're welcome to do so. You don't have to do that, but it's going to be more kind of one-on-one type situation, and it doesn't cost that much. And obviously, if you like the Crime Talk merch, you can get that. We've got shirts. We got mugs. This is my personal favorite, the Crime Talk Lawyer, Lawyer, Lawyer. Put this one on the side. It's kind of my favorite. We got some good merch out there. Anyway, we're going to end it now. Have a great night. Thanks for watching our live. We'll see you in... Well, hopefully next week. Maybe we'll make this a regular thing. Maybe Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. We'll give it a shot, see how it works. And like I said, we'll be back out of YouTube detention here in a couple of weeks as well. So thanks for watching. Have a great night. And the lovely Miss Kristen, if you're still watching, I'm on my way.